Good morning.
Good morning.
So Sam said to me, it's about time I came back. Pamela and I spent, and with her seniors, spent a wonderful week up in Canada, touring Ottawa, Montreal, and Quebec City. Fabulous, just fabulous. If you have not been up there, if you go to Montreal, make sure you go to Old Montreal.
Yeah.
That's kind of kept that flavor of very, very French. It was just incredible. We all got, not we all, Pamela and I and her co-worker, Susan, we all got 10,000 steps in a day. And I shot 450 photographs, Robert. Oh yeah, it was just magnificent. So anyway, you know, this is a really interesting time. What is happening in this country it really calls for those of us who are studying truth to step up in consciousness. You know, there's all kinds of solutions that are put out there on a physical level that, you know, need to be put in place, but there's something else that needs to happen from a consciousness level that's the most challenging. How do we raise ourselves to a level of consciousness where we can impact the whole? Again, Greg Braden's the earth scientist concept that if the square root of the population is in prayer, it affects the entire population. So we have to be part of that square root. Listening to a very famous and wonderful speaker about peace, Bob Marley, on the way to church this morning. And you know, something I've heard all the time, but it just really hit me this morning. He said, emancipate your mind from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. I mean, he was a visionary in terms of this whole idea. So what we're gonna do this morning, we're gonna still be with the Ten Commandments, but we were working with the Ten Commandments for prosperity. As I was working on this, I thought about it, and we're going to shift that a little bit. We're still gonna talk about the Ten Commandments, and it's interesting that the one that falls on today is thou shalt not kill. So we're gonna look at that from a perspective of how do we raise our consciousness to have this impact on the universe. And as Patty's not in here, I can't think of his name, who wrote Celestial Something. But he said that there is a population of people, very highly evolved mystics, who do nothing but hold the consciousness of the earth. If they weren't doing what they were doing, what we'd be experiencing would be much worse. So we want to add ourselves to that population. So today we're going to take a look at the metaphysical look of the Ten Commandments in an effort to understand the impact it has on helping us to stay spiritually balanced when we come face to face with all of life's challenges. And that's the whole idea. We have to prepare ourselves for the process. It's interesting, our granddaughter is in martial arts, and her mother called me yesterday and said that, Judy, we're gonna need your help with this too, with Callista, that she is now sparring. And she was sparring with a student who was at a higher level than her, and he was hitting her, she couldn't stop it, and she started crying. So, but not only her, but other, they're all young, very, very young, 6, 7, 8, 5 year olds. And so my daughter called me and says, you know, she says, I don't want to spar anymore. I don't like that. And so she said, Dad, what can I say to her? So I still had to think about it for a while. But what I'm going to share with her is the idea. I'm going to ask her, what is the definition of being prepared? Preparedness. Because a lot of times the things we have to do to prepare ourselves are painful. You get what I'm saying? But what you're doing is you're preparing yourself for that thing that may happen, so when it happens, you're already there. So that's what we talk about being prayed up. You know, sometimes the time to find to do your prayer meditation every single day, you're saying, I'm just so busy, I can't get the time for this, you know. But when that thing happens, you want to be what? Prayed up. It'd be too late at the point that it happens to try to get yourself into that space. So, you know, it's imperative in this study that we come to understand that The knowledge of truth demands a very high level of conscious awareness and responsibility. You cannot truly study truth at the same time remain unaware of the high level of responsibility you have for implementing that truth in every aspect of your life. So you're studying truth, but you have a responsibility to implement it, all right? And also, once you begin to grasp all the all-inclusive nature of truth, you begin to understand that you cannot discount any aspect of your thinking, speaking, or doing that may violate truth in any way. Truth being the absolute law of God, absolute law of the universe, that demands that our thoughts, words, and actions be in accord with God as the divine principle of love. So that means that as I'm analyzing my own thinking dynamic, am I operating from love? And it's, we know this is not easy, right? Because as we're trying to do this, we're sparring with life and we're getting hit, all right? And we're saying to ourselves or to whatever, I don't want to do this anymore. But that's our responsibility. That's how we prepare ourselves. So the commandment for today is thou shalt not kill. And this is a commandment that many people have a tendency to discount because you're saying to yourself, well, I would never kill anybody. So I got that. I got that. I'm good. Right? But there's a lot more that we need to consider in terms of keeping this spiritual law. Remember, all the commandments have to do with consciousness, and consciousness is created out of the sum total of every experience you've ever had, but not the experience itself. It's how you reacted to the experience that creates your consciousness. Because we know that we can have similar experiences and have totally different outcomes, totally different thoughts about it, all right? So the idea that we want to work with here is how do I, you know, become conscious of how I respond. And I'm using the word respond as opposed to react, because we normally react, but we want to get to a place where we're not reacting as a knee jerk, but we're responding. We're conscious of the way that we are coming back to whatever's happening to us. So our choice in the past was based on knowledge, the experience, and the information that we had in the moment. You know, as things happen, we just did what we do, right? But as you start to study truth, you begin to understand, well, wow, there was a whole other way I could have come at that. I could have responded to it. Now, the thing that teaches all of us, and we all know this, is experience. You have the experience, you have a reaction. Days, months, years later, you look back and go, oh, I could have done that differently, okay? So the key here is that we want to understand that how do we go about, we have been following the letter of the law. Most Christians study the letter of the law. They're the Ten Commandments. Oh, I follow the commandments. It's like the rich man that came to Jesus and says, how do I get to the kingdom of heaven? He says, I follow all the commandments, right? As if because I know them and I try to follow them. But Jesus said there was much more than that, okay? And so that's the key that we got to understand is what's the much more. We're looking at what is being said underneath what is being said. So thou shalt not kill, for example, what is really being said under what is being said. And this, a lot of this is coming out of the Emmett Fox book, The Ten Commandments, and Pam and I were talking about it. When you read the book, it's so dense that you kind of walk away and say, that was a waste of time. I don't know what the heck he was trying to tell me, right? Okay, but you keep working with, and that's the thing about reading the works of mystics. You know, it's just that they talk at a level that you have to be with it for a while till you can get yourself, right, Robert, so you can get yourself up to that level. So anyway, that's what we want to understand. What is being said underneath what is being said? So while Moses pointed to the letter of the law, Jesus pointed to the consciousness of the law. And a person operating from a Mosaic perspective would say, I hear with my ears what is being said. But a person operating from the Christ perspective would say, I perceive with my heart, mind, and soul what is meant. That's why I can't think of his name now. He would say when you're having a conversation with somebody and they're telling you something, you want to repeat it back to them, what they said, but you are paraphrasing it according to what you think they said. You get it? And then you say, is that what you meant? And if you do that, the person a lot of times say, no, that's not really what I really meant. And you say to them, well, please, could you share that with me again? You know, that's how you get to that good communication so that you can come to a place where you can offer help. So the key that we're looking at here is, as we've heard explained before, our ears are tied to our ego, and our ego has a perception and has a tendency to hear what it wants to hear according to its consciousness. That's why this thing I just said was, you're speaking to me, but I'm listening from my own consciousness. You're talking from your consciousness. So if I really want to have a loving communication with you, I need to repeat it back to you to make sure we're on the same page, all right? And if, in relationship, when Pam and I do relationship counseling, marriage counseling kind of things, or relationship counseling, you know, we talk about that idea because we do that with each other. You know, so she'll say something, and I, you know, what men are from Mars and women are from Venus, that whole thing, you know, and I'm like, what? But I've learned to stop going, what? And go, and go, sweetheart, is this what you meant? It keeps us out of trouble, right? Right. Yeah, or you got to put sweetheart up first, right? Yeah. All right. So that's the dynamics. We, you know, we hear with our ears. Ears are connected to our ego perception. But when you hear only with your ears, you do not undergo any kind of change in consciousness. You hear, you know, you hear and you remain just as you are. But when you hear or learn, you know, to come with your whole heart, mind, and soul, then you begin to, you perceive something else. So that's why we, you know, and even in the salesmanship book that I use in college, it says when somebody is speaking to you, have nothing going on in your head. Nothing. Because then you can get the full feeling and meaning of what's being shared with you, all right? As opposed to you, because what are we usually doing when somebody's talking to us? We're conjuring up what we're going to respond with, you know, and that just, that takes us away from really getting the full, you know, feeling of what's being said. So, in Myrtle Fillmore, you know, the whole idea of really hearing is, you know, it's Myrtle Fillmore's story. You know, she has tuberculosis, and at 40 years old, in her 40s, she was, you know, only had a year to live. But she heard W.B. Weeks say, as a child of God, I do not inherit sickness. And she believed, back in those days, you believe you inherited tuberculosis. And she heard it in her soul and not just in her head. You get it? And because she heard it in her soul and not just in her head, and she took it fully into herself, instead of having a year to live, she lived to be 85 years old, healthy and whole. So that's sort of what we're trying to get to. So I believe that most people are much more attuned to just hearing the letter of the law rather than opening their consciousness to what is being fully said and from what is what they're hearing. And we do this because if we just work with the letter of the law, it allows us to manipulate the law to fit the way we want to respond to a certain circumstance. I saw three heads shaking. Did you get what I just said? All right. And again, a lot of times when we're studying in truth, it helps us to wake us up to what we're really doing. We'll say, oh, I'm a spiritual person. I'm working to be spiritual. And then you hear something and go, whoa, I'm not spiritual at all. You know, I'm not in that groove. I'm not understanding the groove that I really need to let myself slip into. What I'm trying to do, I'm trying to be spiritual and be me at the same time. You can't do it. Okay? So our beliefs and opinions, our wants, our needs, our desires, our frustrations, our feelings of unforgiveness, all can contribute to our finding ways of getting around a commandment or two so that we can justify what we really want to say and do. It's like Robin Williams. I can't remember the movie he was in. He goes, I believe in 8 of the 10 commandments. Okay. So when it comes to the discipline of surrendering to spirit, so you know the prayer I teach, Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit, soul, mind, and body. Lately in my meditation, it's been changed to, Father, into thy hands I surrender my spirit, mind, soul, and body. It's a whole nother dynamic, okay? And so we want to get to this idea where, you know, this discipline of surrendering to spirit, it means a willingness to allow yourself to be changed deeply, changing your thinking, your feeling, your very state of being. And what is the catalyst to change? It is life itself. Meaning every experience you have is demanding that you make a shift in consciousness. Every experience is demanding that you make a shift in consciousness. And it's not just about changing your mind, it's changing your whole being, all right, in terms of how you respond. And we can justify our actions and our conditions in our lives as we all we want. We can justify why this is happening, why that's happening. But the one thing we cannot justify away is the nature of our consciousness and the impact that it's having on our lives. No matter what we think or say or what justifications we conjure up, it is impossible to weasel our way out of being responsible for our thoughts, words, deeds, and actions. And in the psalmist, he gave us a guidance. He said, this is the meditation you want to think about in terms of getting your whole being to change. And this is what he said in Psalm 19:14. Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. All right? And so that's sort of the prayer. Now, if you have that prayer in mind, when that stuff comes up in your head, you use the prayer. Does that make sense? See, that's the mechanism. That's the practicality. We are practical Christians, which means we practice this process. And the perspective offered by the psalmist does not allow for excuses or opinions that we can use to try to bend this whole thing to justify why we're the way we are. And that's just our, all of us. Me too. I write this and I go, whoa. I just wrote that for me. Okay? Because that's the nature of our being. The ego wants to be just, it wants to justify, rectify itself. And that, you know, so it's sort of how do I get out of that? And in Matthew 5:18, it said, for truly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot, will pass from the law until all is accomplished. That means that we have to come under the rule of the Ten Commandments, but beyond the surface level. The surface level was because that was the level we needed just to act morally. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, you know, all those kind of things. Remember, the first four commandments, as we shared, have to do with our relationship with God, and the last six have to do with our relationship with ourselves, okay? If our relationship with God is not good, our relationship with ourselves and each other will not be that good either, all right? So Jesus brought a broader meaning to the law to give us a greater understanding of the overall perspective and its meaning in our lives. So it's recorded in Matthew 5:21-25. And I like to go back over these Bible verses because each time you hear them, hopefully you get a different perspective, all right? So this is what he said, Matthew 5:21-25. You have heard it said to men of old, you shall not kill, and whoever kills shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother or sister shall be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother and sister shall be liable to the council. Whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. So, and this is the part you know. If you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go first be reconciled to your brother and sister and then come and offer your gift. All right? So Jesus is telling us that we have work to do, and that's a good thing. All right? So the gift that you are offering to Spirit is a gift of yourself. You are surrendering to the guidance of Spirit. I'm giving the gift to myself, the gift you give to Spirit. The only thing Spirit needs from us is a gift of ourselves. Is that you with me? Okay. So you're offering that gift. But however, this verse is expressing that if you're offering the gift of yourself to God, but have not offered the gift of forgiveness to the person or people in your life that you are struggling with, you have to go do that first. First things first, all right? So the spiritual lesson given by Jesus is saying, if you cannot treat your visible tangible relationships with love, compassion, patience, understanding, and respect, then you will not treat your relationship with God any different. every excuse we make up for why I can't do what you want me to do is the same excuse we give God. All right? And so all relationships are created in our mind. All relationships are created in our mind. So how you are thinking about your relationship will either be harmonious or be chaotic. Right? All relationships are in our heads. Everything we do is in our head. You're eating, hopefully not, a McDonald's burger. And now you can get the Beyond Meat burger or the Impossible burger. How many of you have heard of those? Tastes just, oh man, is it good, but it's all plant-based. You can even go to Dunkin' Donut now, and you know how you get that thing with the sausage patty, egg, and cheese? Now they've got Beyond Meat. It's a meatless thing, but it's delicious. Huh? Yeah. But anyway, so the key here is, you know, is the whole process is everything we do is in our head. That's why marketing is always going for your mind. All right? Everything marketing does is going for your mind. Okay? So, yes, there is a strong physical component to our relationships, but that physical component is dependent on the consciousness that created it. I believe we spend more time thinking about our relationships than we are actually physically involved in the relationship. You know, even when you are with the person or people that you love, you're thinking about it even while you're right there with them. Is that, you understanding it? Okay. So this is why spiritual understanding of the commandment, thou shalt not kill, is so critical. If we spend more time thinking about our relationships than we are actually physically involved in our relationships, then the question switches from how physically safe are the people in our lives to how safe are they in our minds. Think to yourself, how many people have you hurt in your mind? How many character assassinations have you made in your mind? And from the spiritual perspective of this commandment, thou shalt not kill, no justification of our negative thoughts, words, or actions are acceptable. And that is not so much for the benefit of those towards whom you feel some malice as it is for your own well-being. That's a powerful thought. Because we can beat up some people in our heads. All right? And then justify it. So in this spiritual study, we must come to an understanding that establishing a conscious, heartfelt relationship with the Lord of our being is a far greater goal than getting even with someone who somehow dishonored, violated, or hurt us. And that is what makes this study of the spiritual process so challenging. Is everybody following me? I believe everybody in this room can have a memory of something that hurts you deeply, somebody who hurts you deeply. And from an ego perspective, we can all say yes. And we'll talk with each other and we'll say yes. You got all the right in the world to feel that way. But from a spiritual perspective, that level that we're trying to get to, there's no justification. And that makes it hard, almost seemingly impossible. How do I get past this experience or experiences that I've had? But that's the path we've chosen to move up to this goal. So the goal, you know, that goal, you know, and this whole idea of getting to this level, it was realistic and a justifiable goal. You know, I got to get even with this person. I got to get back at this person. That was justifiable from a spiritually immature perspective. That's why Jesus, when he was talking to the disciples, said, you know, when he said, feed them milk. Milk means that they were not mature enough spiritually to eat meat. So the key is, do you want to move from milk to non-meat product, right? I couldn't even get myself to say go to the, to the Beyond Burger, right? And I, you know, I try to put humor into this stuff because it's hard. This stuff is hard to grasp, you know. So the key, again, let me say it again. So the goal, you know, that the goal of, you know, getting even with somebody, that was realistic and justifiable when we're spiritually mature. But if we truly want to grow in spiritual consciousness, to a mature spiritual relationship with God, we will have to let go of all hateful, hurtful thoughts. So you have to ask yourself, do I really want a relationship with Spirit? And that relationship comes from an inner cleansing, all right? And it's that the thing is, we cannot cleanse ourselves. The ego cannot jump out of the ego. That's why I've changed my prayer now to, into thy hands, I surrender, all right? So the key is, we ought to understand that hurtful and faithful cannot exist in your consciousness at the same time. So if you're upset with something in your life, you cannot be faithful as well. You cannot have faith and hurt at the same time. One of those, you can say to yourself, well, I have faith, but there's one of those that's going to have a greater emotional impact on you than the other. And that's what you have to pay attention to. Which one of these things am I saying? Am I hate-filled or am I faith-filled? Because they can't happen at the same time. Practically every experience we have has us standing at the cross, meaning the crossroads in our lives, and it is time to make a choice of to either remain as you are or let go and let God bring you to a whole new state of mind. All right? So we're all experiencing the cross. Because the cross is a crucifixion, right? So Jesus taught us to love God, love yourself, and love your neighbor as yourself. Why? Because this is a trickle-down effect, meaning if you truly love God, you will feel love within yourself. And if you truly feel love within yourself, you will let that spill over into others, okay? That is the law of the universe. It is an unavoidable, unchangeable spiritual formula for living and being. If any one of those components in the formula is changed, it changes the whole component. Love God, love yourself, love your neighbor as yourself. One of those changes, the whole formula is mute. Okay? So that's, you know, this is a, not a, this is not a what came first, the chicken or the egg thing. Okay? In this case, the chicken and the egg are one in the same. Neither really has existence before, after, or without the other. Okay? So it is the same with our relationships. Our relationship with each other are indicative of our relationships with God and vice versa. Our relationship with God is indicative of our relationship with each other. Neither really has existence without the other. See, you get the mathematics of it? That's why Jesus said 1 + 1 = 1. All right? Now, one is the idea here. One of these sorts is sort of a reflection of the other. It may be seemed that our relationship had existence without conscious, intimate relationship with God. In other words, you have relationships with people in your life. You say, well, I got a relationship with these folks or this person or whatever, but I don't have much of a relationship with God. Okay? It can't be that way. Because relationships usually are based on love. And there's only one love, and that's the love of God. So if you are experiencing great joy in your loving relationships, you are allowing God's love to flow through you. If you are experiencing great disharmony and upset in your relationship, the love of God is still flowing through you, but you are distorting it. You're corrupting it. Get it? Back to the whole, remember the slideshow thing? You know, you turn on the old slide projector and that white light is coming through, but you drop a slide and it distorts the white light. So that white light, which is love, is always flowing through you. God is always flowing through you. But if you're dropping an ugly slide in front of it, you're distorting the love of God, okay? And every time we express hateful, angry, unforgiving thoughts, you know, that's what we're doing. We're distorting that, right? And we may only do it in our mind, but it's still the same thing. God is the essence of relationship embedded in all relationships. So whatever conditions, constraints we have put on our love for each other will be the same conditions and constraints we'll put on our love for God. And then the reverse is also true. So the scripture said, when you are at the altar, altar, meaning in prayer or meditation. That's what it means when you be at the altar. You don't have to actually go to an altar, right? You know, you're at the altar, and you could be doing driving.
Hopefully not.
Huh?
Hopefully not.
Well, you know,
it happens.
Right? What I mean by driving is that you're driving and you're being peaceful no matter what condition you're in. Okay. You could do it any kind of space you're in. You can always be in this mindset where you're keeping that connection with spirit. All right. So you're at the altar. And, you know, there needs to be a sense of clarity, a sense of peacefulness, a sense of mindfulness, a sense of love. But if your clarity, peacefulness, mindfulness, and sense of love is shattered by a thought of an unloving, unkind situation in your life with some of the people, then you must stop and make amends. Now, this does not mean that you leave the altar. Okay? The best time to make amends is in your prayer and meditation time. Now, I told you this before, it's what I do. My practice, I bring that person into my mind and I surround them with white light. And I have to keep doing it until, I'm bringing them in front of me and I'm surrounding me and that person in this white light. And I keep doing it until there's nothing but white light. It's not me, it's not them. It's just pure light. It takes a lot of effort to do that. Try it. Try it sometime. Somebody who's, you know, who just want to strangle them. Bring them into your meditation time. And if you don't get it in that particular session, come back the next time and do it again. I mean, you just have to keep at it. Like I added planks, right, to my ab workout. But I saw a woman in the gym, she was doing planks, and then she was doing up, up, down, down, up, up, down, down. I said, oh, that looks good. Let me try that. I got three of them struggling. But what I said to myself, that's now part of my workout. And eventually, I'll be able to do them like she does. Right? But you get what I'm saying? It's the same idea. That whatever it is that you are trying to get, you know, become part of your whole thinking process, you have to keep working at it. The first time you do it, it's like, oh, that was a waste of time. But you put time into it, so it was not a waste of time. And then next time you do it, and all of a sudden, before you know it, it just becomes the way that you are. All right? And so your question may be, do I ever actually go to the person to make amends? And the answer is maybe. Right? But not until you have completely cleared your mind of the negative energy that could kill the relationship. You get it? So once you've got the work done in your head at the altar, then if you want, you can go to the person because you now can bring a whole nother, even if they are still out there, it doesn't matter because you've done the work to center yourself and you can remain so centered that even if they're yelling at you, after a while, they'll run out of energy because there's nothing coming back to feed what they're feeling. Again, from a practical perspective, does that make sense? Okay. It's the planks, right? And it's important for you to understand that the most significant aspect of this spiritual exercise is that you are the first one to benefit from it. If you have cleared yourself of the negative energy you feel towards someone else, you now are healed. And not only can you now help heal the relationship, you can heal just by stepping into a room. You become a healing energy for anyone who comes close to you. So, to help us with this practice, we're going to end with this affirmation. The power and presence of God are active within me. The power and presence of God are active within me. Say that with me. The power and presence of God are active within me. Every time I say yes to life,
every time I say yes to life,
yes to love,
yes to love,
yes to being forgiving,
yes to being forgiving.
Amen.